For August the 5th, 2016, we talk about Telltale's Batman launch woes, Guacamelee, and we ask you about your favorite kinds of multiplayer. Welcome to Level 160. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Jella Prendes.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. And this week we are back to four. We've got Jala, we've got Ben, and most importantly, we've got Dennis back. Hey, Dennis.
For the first time in like forever.
I know, right? Our schedules have just not lined up.
No, but I'm glad to be back.
I know we needed you last week. Because we were all super serious faced that we didn't even have very many titles. Like, we needed the Dennis in there.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can bring up the title per minute ratio here.
Or yeah. TPMs, yeah. No, we're gonna be audited for the TPMs here, so if we can boost these numbers at the end of the quarter, that'd be fantastic, actually.
Our investors will be very happy. Yes.
The podcast authority will revoke our license if we don't have enough extra title. It's a union thing. We don't actually use them, but we gotta have them.
You don't want the podcast comptroller bringing the hammer down, okay? With his big bushy mustache. Yeah. But what you been up to, Dennis? Like, where you been?
Oh, I've been everywhere, man. The first week I was gone, I was traveling for business, so I wouldn't have been able to do it anyway. But also, there was some mix up around schedules on when we were actually recording. Second week, we just didn't record, but I was around. Mm-hmm. And then third week, I was traveling for business again, and so I had to miss. Thankfully, that is about as heavy as traveling for business is going to be for me. Like, there shouldn't really be another month where I'm traveling that close to each other.
Cool.
That's the new job, and thankfully the trips were a lot of fun, so it was not time that I was just hating my life and wishing I was back. Even though listening to you guys, I was hating my life and wishing I was back because I'm used to being able to interact and I had to just hang out. So.
Yelling out on the airplane.
That might be the most narcissistic thing I've ever said on the show. I apologize.
No, that's fine.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny. Over the weekend when I was at Classic Game Fest, when everybody had gone to go get breakfast or something, people were asking, like, how the hell I ended up on the level in the first place and where the hell I got into Duck Feed and all that. And so I was like, well, see, I was just playing games with Dennis and David. And then, like, I was just like, I have opinions about stuff because, you know, I always email everybody and tell everybody what I think. And then, you know, I was just teasing you. And like, you know, you need a girl on a show and you're like, hey, we could do that. And I'm like, oh, well, I was just kind of like kidding, but cool. Okay. And that's how I got here.
Yeah.
So. Don't open your mouth unless you're ready to step up. That's how we roll on the Duck Feed Network.
Okay. How many times have I stepped for you, homie?
That's what I'm saying, hey, Dennis.
I'm gonna say that again.
Hey, Dennis, what kind of accent was that?
It was supposed to be New Jersey.
Are you a shark or a jet?
Ooh. A machete?
TPMs are already skyrocketing.
I've got a meter here. It's like an applause meter.
But yeah. So that's the Jala origin story.
Yeah, well, welcome back, Dennis. We needed you.
Yeah,
so you are here.
We needed some outside.
Belatedly, but you're here. You know?
We needed some outside perspective because otherwise it would just be three people who had been in the same town recently.
Two one note on all that stuff, so.
I know, just talking about the good times we had, you know, just elbowing each other in the ribs, laughing, slapping, all of that. It was a good time.
tell more about that. I want to hear the debrief from that weekend.
Jala, how did you you had an uneventful trip back?
It was uneventful, thankfully.
Yeah.
Everything else up to then was kind of like a disaster train wreck. Oh my God, what the hell? Like, for most of the rest of my trip, like, just crap happened constantly. Mm. And when I got home, then there was like crazy stuff that happened even just today, trying to, you know, just normalize everything and get back to normal.
Yeah.
Like, DHL came to deliver a package to my door, and then the guy locked his keys in his car with the car running, and his phone was in there. And so I had to call, like, you know, like a locksmith, but at the same time I was supposed to be working remotely from home, and then, you know, whatever.
Yeah, anyway, I really can't be your babysitter right now.
Yeah. I know. It's like, I got stuff to do, homie. Like, I don't even know what to tell you. So, yeah. Like,
you didn't just picture him sheepishly knocking on your front door. Hey, do you have a coat hanger I could borrow?
Yeah, pretty much. Because then my whole toolbox was out there, and eventually my dad swung by and helped him get into his car right about the time the locksmith showed up. So there was more of a debacle. It was just like a train wreck. Yeah. Like I said,
now,
a train
wreck.
Now,
if I know anything about rom-coms, you guys are dating now, right?
What you just said, Jala, is like a magical incantation that sets off social anxiety. It's such an awkward thing. Like, I feel like I'm on the hook for your fate, but I need to be somewhere else. There's like pressure from too many fronts.
Yeah.
Can I go to the bathroom? Because I need a fucking minute.
Yeah. Well, and then too, like, I was trying to really hack out a lot of stuff at work because I had been gone. And so, like, I was busy, and I have my partner at work's going to be out at the end of the week, and I have pressure on me to get work done, and then here's this guy taking up like an hour of my day because he locked his keys in his car. And I can't just leave him out there and be like, sorry, dude. You know, like, I have to help him, you know?
Just hand him a rock and try and instill in him the courage to do what is right.
Yeah. Company truck's insured. Well, you know, company truck's insured.
If it was a video game, you could totally walk away from that mess, you know? Well, yeah. You'd be like, okay, what? You know, like open world game, just be like, nah, it's fine.
You get like 3 dark side points.
Just yeah. That's okay. I don't want that side quest. I don't have to deal with that.
Ben, how about you? How's your come down from the con?
Well, I mean, I didn't have to do much traveling to get home, so it was relatively low stress. But
how was your bike ride? Was it good?
Yeah, I think I just walked, so it was nice and pleasant. But it was really good seeing everyone over the weekend, and surprisingly, a lot of people who listen to this show or the shows on the network live in Austin.
I know, right? Huh. Like, that's the weird thing. When we show up in a place, people are there.
Yeah.
You know, you never know.
Amazing how that works.
Well, and like, so when we did the Columbus thing, people kind of traveled in from pretty far away, right? And the same thing happened here, but there were far more locals here in Austin rather than I even expected. And you never
know. What about versus PRGE?
PRGE is pretty comparable. Gotcha. which is ridiculous because we're kind of based in Portland, so you would expect that to be to get a little bit of a bump, right? But it was fantastic.
Yeah.
I met at least two of the Pauls who contributed to the too many Pauls problem. And I told each one that that they were not the one who tipped the scale to it being too many Pauls, even though everybody involved has a little bit of, you know, they're sharing a bit of their responsibility. I got to meet Carlo after him, like, kind of hanging around and being a contributor for like 6 years.
yeah. I've had Carlo on my friends list forever, to the point where I honestly couldn't remember where I met him from. It's just like this guy that I know that's cool.
Yeah.
I saw his name start popping up in the Slack channels. I'm like, oh, that's right. He's from Duckfeet. I thought like he could have told me he was a high school friend and I totally would have believed him.
Yeah. But like meeting like Account 404 and meeting fucking Jeremy and his wife Autumn. Such delightful people.
Yeah, she was my lady beard, bro. I guess nobody understands that.
Oh my gosh. We'll tell the story. The extra sub won't come out for a while, and we'll tell the story on there on the appropriate show. But we get up there to do the live panel about Punch Out, and I'm looking down and I'm nervous because I've got people like staring expectantly at me, and you know, we're trying to work out audio issues, etc. And down the line, I look down and I see Jala and Autumn are both wearing fake beards, and I was like, laugh about it and call attention to it. They look back down and they say and they've got they're holding up like a printed out sign that has a picture of Roars, Gary's cat, on it. It's like, oh, this is so delightful. We have like a ridiculous cheering section. It's great.
And the episode was really good, by the way.
The sign, the sign though, I said my other beard is on Roars. So yeah, we just wanted to like out a little bit before they got into their show.
There was also a backup beard if those beards didn't work out.
Yeah,
as well,
there was. Right? Yeah, there was. And not only that, but, you know, like the whole thing where this came about is because of this discussion in the Slack channel where it was like, if DuckCon becomes a thing, it's going to be BeardCon because there's all this beard chat and all these guys have beards. And, you know, like you're going to need like a beard for admission to BeardCon and whatever. And so to blend in with our people, we had to get beards. But then it turned out that the Austin crew, like nobody has beards in Austin. But like, all the
well, because it's fucking the surface of the sun.
They all
no,
got
Houston
burned
is
off.
The surface of the sun. It's a little bit hotter here, okay?
Okay. It's surface of the sun adjacent.
There you go.
So you guys, where do you even buy a fake beard?
Amazon. Oh, well, okay. I did anyway. And also, mine was called The Beast. It was awesome. And it made me look like Jesus. So, anyway.
I'm going to need a judge's ruling. I don't consider what I have to be beard. I consider it to be party stubble.
So, okay.
Yeah. See, as someone who cannot grow a full beard, who just gets advanced scraggle,
mm-hmm.
like that's as much as I can do is advanced scraggle. I have to call it you have a beard.
Okay. All right.
And it I might just be beard envy on my part, and I'm seeing them where they aren't because I'm you know, devastated that I can't grow my own, but
yeah,
but I think what you got qualifies.
Okay You know, I think that I'm just taking it as read, it's an assumption, you know, this beard is water, right? Yeah. But oh my gosh, it was so fun. Like it was so much drinking. Oh my god, so much drinking.
Oh my god, trying to stroll in after having a psychotic speed racer episode because my plane was late, and mm-hmm. like trying to drive across Texas to get there, mm-hmm. and then like roll up and everybody is so shit-faced, and I'm like the last one to the party, and then everybody's like, oh my god, hi.
Yeah, like, you were in a position to get the most cheerful greeting.
I know, it was awesome. Like yeah. It was actually the best time to show up ever. And then not only that, because I hadn't eaten all day, like I said, like I had drinks, like I had a couple of drinks and I was like, I'm good, I'm buzzed. You know, like I felt it pretty quick because I didn't have anything in my stomach.
Yeah,
so
yeah, so that was a fantastic time. I'm super grateful for everyone who came out. Ben and Jala, I'm very grateful for your help.
Yeah.
All of that. Grateful to one of the too many Pauls who printed out our notes at the last moment. I don't know, it feels amazing. And if you are looking for travel plans for October, like PRGE is like right around the corner. So that's in Portland, October, I think like 20th through 23rd or something like that. Whatever that weekend is that the 23rd intersects with. Like we have a panel, we have a booth, we have all of that. And just we would love to see you. Kind of pursuant to that, like because this is such a good time and because we've done it in three cities and had a fantastic success, or four cities if you count Cincinnati and Columbus as different. We actually have a channel in the Slack, I think called Local Meats and Meats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not to be confused with Local Meats and Meats, which is just the same two words.
Yeah, so swapped. It's funk rock or funk rock. Yeah. Ben gets it. He knows.
I do. That's a solid reference.
that is a place to organize local meetups. And Jala, you very graciously put together a like a pin map kind of thing, which is pinned there.
Yeah.
And I'll also put that in a Duckfeed update. But can you explain that map?
It's very neato. All you do is you click on the link and then enter in the password, and then you can drop a pin in your location with your, what we've been doing has been like Slack usernames and, you know, like other social outlets, social media, like if you have Twitter or whatever, like what your handle is there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that way you can see at a glance who's in your area, or if you're traveling somewhere, who's going to be in the area that you're going to be in. So maybe you can hook up and, you know, meet with people and hang out, or even coordinate with people who are within some reasonable amount of driving distance, like the people who are in Louisiana and the people who are in Austin, and you know, me, like we can all meet up together even though, you know, we're kind of apart because it's about 3-ish hours driving one way or the other for me.
That's a day so, trip.
Yeah, it's a day trip type of thing, so you know, that's a thing that can happen. Mm-hmm. So I'm not alone in the world anymore.
None of us are. And that's the fantastic thing. So don't be weirded out by the prospect of meeting somebody, because like pretty much universally, every interaction we've had has been amazing. Like
yeah, you've tested that shit multiple times and it's held up.
Oh gosh, I just I kind of get tears in my eyes thinking about how great it is. is such a force for good, or has been.
So you and I, just on this map, you and I must have entered the exact same thing, just Cincinnati, Ohio.
Yeah, I wasn't going to...
No matter how much you zoom in on my pin, there's a slow cop going on there.
Says one of two and then two of two, so like you have to toggle through put the same city.
Mm-hmm. I've mentioned enough landmarks around where I'm at that people could probably triangulate like my house to one or two houses. However, I just wanted to put I just did Cincinnati, OH. You know,
and well, that if that's a thing that like bugs you to be on top of somebody else's pin, you can just drag it like a little bit to the side so it registers a little bit differently.
Yeah, give it a instead
of being at whatever this is,
yeah,
at the 21C Hotel, I'm going to go across the street to Nada.
Mm. And, that's fantastic, and that's right around the corner from Soto, where you can get some of the most delicious ricotta donuts that you've ever had.
Oh, the donuts are so good. You wouldn't think an Italian place would be perfect for donuts, but
I would.
There it is.
Man, I have my stepfamily on one side is Italian, and some of the best donuts I've ever had have come from over there.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
I can't drag it, but we'll figure it out. Anyway, yeah, so we're both in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
There are other people intermittently in Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And
so we'll make that map public, and I encourage people to take advantage of that and find people who are nearby, because at least the Austin group is already looking at putting together like tabletop stuff, and I don't know. It is super kind of heartening.
Hell yeah.
In relation to that, I want to let people know that we have just launched the DuckFeed/Watch Out for Fireballs Team Fortress 2 server. And we tested that out tonight. It is a server and a Discord server, which is like an external voice chat app. You can go to duckfeed.tv/TF2. That is T as in Thomas, that is T as in Thurston, H as in Howell, 2 as in the second, the father of Thurston Howell the third.
wait, TH2 or TF2?
Ah, fuck. Sorry. Yeah, so no,
where's
it's not.
This H coming from?
Yeah, no. So
you know, Fortress spelled with an H.
T is in Thurston, F as in Fowl, 2 is in the second, Thurston Fowl the second. you can get the login information for that. We made it a private server just so we couldn't get randos. I wanted to be to at least have a little bit of a gate there. But it's already been a fantastic time, and we are covering Team Fortress 2 for our Watch Out for Fireballs 5th anniversary. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think that's all of the news and all of the patter, unless anybody else has any stories or anecdotes from the past week or so.
I have a question.
Okay.
What game are you going to be covering at PRGE?
Has it been revealed?
We
have not pinned that down just yet. I thought we had an answer, but we've started questioning it. It is somewhere within the neighborhood of 2 to 3 possibilities.
Gotcha.
Yeah. But we'll get it figured out probably a month in advance. And you can rest assured it'll probably be a Nintendo kind of thing, unless we pick something else, in which case, you know, we'll go with something else. Yeah.
Yay.
Cool. So we've got the usual kind of show for you, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And let's get started with the brief, where we talk about things that have happened in the past week or so in the world of video games around us. See, I mixed them up, not on purpose, but I'm going to pretend I did. Does anybody want to volunteer to take their stories first?
We got a lot of downers this week.
Yeah,
volunteer mine because there's a part of it that I'm excited about, but there's also a big part that's a downer. So,
I think that yours might be the closest thing to a win that we have. So, so go for it.
Yeah. So, exciting news is that Overwatch is getting new skins for the Summer Olympics, which, just on paper, saying that one sentence is a really, really cool idea. They also are doing a new soccer, and let's be honest, it's Rocket League style game, with one of the heroes, and it's straight up Rocket League, right? You know, there's a giant ball, you can knock it around, but the physics are really tough to manage.
Is that Pharah?
No, it's Lucio, who is he's a healer character. The big thing is that his alternate file is like a shockwave. And so that fit the best with kind of knocking a soccer ball around. Okay. He can also like wall run and do this other stuff that is kind of athletic. And his Olympic skin is a soccer player. So it all just kind of comes together into Overwatch's version of Rocket League.
Cool.
Which, again, really, really cool idea on paper. And then the downer part is that from what I've read, the brawl mode, the soccer Rocket League thing is nigh unplayable. It's just the physics are too crazy over the top. They've gone past Rocket League difficult into just unplayablesville. And so hopefully they can tweak that back. But yeah, I hate that town. I would say hopefully they can tweak that back, except it's a brawl. So it means it's going to be here for a week and then gone. But at the same time, this took, you know, it's a custom arena. It's, you know, very custom build of this character. Like, it feels like it took enough effort that they might try to fix it. We can only hope. The other thing that just made me furious was I found out the Olympic skins, to get them, you have to buy a special Rio loot box. And you cannot get this box by leveling up in game or even using in-game currency. So for a game that I paid, you know, $40 for, whatever, I now have to invest $2 more per box to get these Olympic skins. But wait, it gets worse. Like, that's already incredibly shitty. And then it just goes to another level, because not only do you have to buy these boxes and get a random set of skins, so you can't even control what you're getting and what you're not getting.
Right.
But as few as one skin per box will be Olympic themed. Meaning you could pay to get this special Olympic box. Yeah, you could pay to get this special Olympic box and only get one Olympic skin out of four. It just boggles my mind. Like, that it is the most asinine, like, ripoff style free-to-play bullshit from, you know, a paid game.
Yeah.
From a company that otherwise does stuff really well. Like, if you look at Hearthstone, if you look at World of Warcraft, they can do free-to-play. And so this just feels so, so tone deaf, even though the idea of having these kind of seasonal skins is pretty cool.
Right. That's garbage.
Yeah. Just really insensitive, it feels like.
I mean,
and yeah, so I kind of bristled at the whole skin unlock system, because it's very much like a, you know, you get these random loot boxes in the base game. I kind of bristled at that, but, you know, you could get it with all in-game currency, yes, you could buy extra with real money, but you never had to. So I just took it as, okay, it's part of the game, that's fine. But this is just a real blatant cash grab.
Yeah, I mean, so if they were using this as a fundraiser for something kind of cool, that'd be pretty great. But
no, this is this is Pad Blizzard's pockets, the charity.
Yeah, and that is kind of taking advantage of people who will want to kind of go into a frenzy to get something that is very obviously time limited.
Yeah, like once the Olympics are over, slash once the Olympics turn into a horrible debacle that no one wants to remember.
I mean, it's already happening. Like, useless. Look at some pictures of the hotels. Yeah,
it's horrendous. So, yeah, it just disappointing. And there's so much in this announcement that I want to be excited about.
Mm-hmm.
And they just seem to be shooting themselves in the foot and shooting the players in the face, like every step in the way. Like, this just feels very disrespectful.
Wait a minute. So that implies that they are stepping on the player's face as they are shooting their own foot.
Yeah, that feels about the right mental image.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure I set up the right tableau here.
Well, their foot could be under the face. We could be like sleeping at their feet or something.
I suppose. I mean, either way.
I'm trying to imagine a scenario.
It's a very servile pose.
we were hit with Anna's sleep dart, who's a character in the game, and fell down in such a way at their feet that when they shot it, okay, that works.
I've got all right, cool. Back and to the left.
I needed to make this internal logic work.
Oh my gosh, yeah, that's pretty garbagey. I'm sad that you said that thing, Dennis.
Well, it gets worse from there. From the stories I'm seeing.
Jala, how about you? Do you have anything to redeem us?
This one's a little bit of an older story, but like from about a month ago, but I don't recall hearing much about it. The Oculus originally had software locked on it that stopped people from playing games made for the Rift from playing them on the Vive or other rival VR headsets. And last month, Oculus removed that block. Now, essentially, this was initially started up because somebody made software called Revive that allowed gamers to play Rift games on the Vive, and then Oculus tried to, you know, shut that down by making these software locks, and they finally just, like, released those locks again. So, you know, like, they kind of went back and forth between, hey, no, we don't like you, you know, being able to play these games on other devices, and then going, you know what? Never mind, that was a dick move. I think maybe we'll undo that. And then they made a statement that was, we believe protecting developer content is critical to the long-term success of the VR industry. And yeah. that was their statement about it.
Duck season, rabbit and, season, duck season.
Yeah. So, whatever. So, that's about it. Like, they were being dickheads, and then they just, like, stopped being dickheads, I guess. About that, anyway. So
they recognize that, like, even amongst their own audience, the market share is so incredibly small. Like, they're probably, I mean, it seems realistic to say that they're fighting for some number in the small thousands of users at this point, right?
Yeah. Like that. Yeah, that's my impression.
I mean, it's going
anyway,
to retail, so it's got to be higher than that. But
right.
It's still
yeah.
Super-
Yeah, but
yeah, it's
but
it's,
I mean, like, of the hardcore defenders slash adopters, I don't think, you know, there are as many people who are really, really on board with the Rift as they are with, you know, like the Vive or whatever, you know.
I have no insight into the market. All I can think is somebody ran the numbers and saw that there was possibly more to be gained by getting the revenue cut off of the exclusive software sales. For one thing or another, than there was for, like, platform lock-in, right?
Yeah,
yeah. Or, I mean, they could have realized that this is such a niche market that the people who are into VR are so fanatically into VR that they're more likely than not to have multiple versions of a VR headset.
Yeah.
And so, or, you know, at least enough of them were that way that they were significantly hurting themselves by casting these restrictions around because their consumer didn't want to be limited to just one.
Yeah. And it seems like, at least right now, you know, this is the two kind of biggest players that I've seen, excepting, like, the Gear VR and the, you know, PS VR, which is coming out later and is kind of going to be off on its own little balcony. But it kind of seems like it's... You know, both of, like, you know, both HTC and I guess Facebook or Oculus or whatever, saying, like, yeah, this, you know, we're not they're kind of drawing the lines in this weird format war that might actually make it not be that much of a format war.
We can only hope.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But in that case, yeah. Vive does so much more. I don't know.
Well, I had to throw that out there because every once in a while we'll drop something about VR in our brief, and that was something that I had seen about it. And, like, it had happened, you know, like I said, last month, or actually now in June, so that was a bit ago. But, like, I hadn't heard anybody talk about it whatsoever, even though, you know, like, that's kind of like important about, you know, like, if you follow VR stuff, that would be important to know. So
yeah. And I just, like, if I saw it, I probably discounted it because, like, it's this weird little Game of Thrones machination.
Yeah.
But it's, well, like, I mean, it's super important. Like,
well, we've made comments about, you know, like, the Oculus decisions heretofore. So, I mean, like, that's another one of those weirdo things. But then they, like, because when it all went down, like, I want to say that Revive and, like, the lockout and everything happened, like, in April, and then by June they'd already decided to, you know, undo the thing they just did, so it only lasted for a few months.
Yeah.
So, like, they, you know, they pretty quickly came back from that one and said, you know what, that's a bad idea, you know. I mean, they still did it, but you know, at least they undid it anyway.
Yeah. There was a booth a little ways down from ours at Austin, at least on Saturday, that apparently, like, it was, you know, there was no signage, there was nothing. It was just a table that had a computer, and they had some tripods set up with the Vive sensors. And by all outward appearances, it just looked like somebody bought a booth space to say, hey, check out our Vive. It turned out to just be an indie developer who was demoing their game, but, like, we were watching people kind of groping around. It actually looked pretty fun, except I didn't want to get both pink eye and head lice. I would love to try a Vive if I could get a list of people's names and medical histories before I everybody else who has worn it. I don't know. It looked kind of neat. It was the first time I saw one in person.
Mm-hmm. You'd need to pull it off the production line and then burn it immediately after.
Hey, does this Vive hold up the boiling? I'll do mine because it's going to be pretty short. So Europe is not a great place to be. Not making light of it. I'm just saying, like, there's been a lot of terrible things that have happened over the past. It's always been like this, I guess. That is what we're to be, is what we're to believe right now. But the biggest game show in the world, not, you know, like Wheel of Fortune game show, but a video game convention, Gamescom, which is happening in Cologne, gets something close to like 345,000 people going to it. And that's in Cologne, Germany. And so, like, in the lead up to this and in thinking about just kind of everything that that has happened recently, all the tragedies, thinking like, hey, are they gonna do something about that? And it turns out that all the people are not all the people, but Gamescom itself, the organization that puts it together, says like, yeah, we're gonna amp up security at this. So like, they're gonna be lines, but they're gonna be checking people's bags. They're going to be kind of like clamping down on cosplay. Basically anything that looks like a weapon will not be allowed in, pretty much saying, yes, this is the reality. We need to ensure that everybody is going to be safe. So I think that's a good move on their part.
Yeah, I mean, I think any other year people would bitch, but, you know, it's kind of real enough, everything that's gone down, that I think people will be understanding.
Yeah, so we can only hope that nothing bad will happen, and hopefully these measures go some way toward helping ensure that.
It's a far sight better than indifference,
for sure, or complacence even. Mm-hmm. Either or. Ben, you've got a couple of stories here. Some of it was again continuing the bummer train.
Also some downers, yeah. All right, so some two quick downers, get them out of the way, maybe. There are issues with Batman. Apparently, Batman is just not meant to be played on the PC. so Telltale released their game, I think, today, but recently. And apparently there are some issues with it running on PC where audio and video will get out of sync. Frame rate will dip down to 10 frames per second. It'll crash, bad things like that. So apparently there are similar issues with this game than there were with Arkham Knight from, you know, a few years ago, even though it's different developers. So that's kind of a bummer. The article doesn't mention if there's any issues with the PS4 versions or the Xbox versions. It doesn't appear that there are, but so that's kind of a bummer.
So maybe after Madden stopped being relevant, all of the curse energy had to go somewhere else, and the only thing that is comparable to the NFL is Batman himself.
That feels about right. Batman versus all of the NFL, I think, is about an even fight.
I think he could at least get through most of the AFC. but you know, before taking a small break for rehydration and you know, just sucking on an orange slice. Yeah. Yeah, it's a bummer because like that, like the actual game has reviewed pretty well, and we've all you know, to varying degrees expressed some amount of anticipation for it.
Yeah, I'm surprised. Like this, the platform it's built on has to be so completely different than anything related to the previous, you know, action game, that I'm surprised that they could get it this wrong on two such significantly different platforms.
Yeah, and I don't remember any issues with like The Wolf Among Us or The Walking Dead series at all. And this is probably the same sort of engine that they used when they made those games. So
yeah, all that I can think of, and I don't want to be like blames a problem on a new feature guy, but is the fact that this has multiplayer stuff built into it. Maybe they upgraded the software or the underlying engine enough that it was unstable.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So continuing the bummer train, another kind of bad news about a game that's coming out is apparently, I didn't know this, but somebody paid, I think, $1,600 to get a copy of No Man's Sky early.
Oh, God.
And so he has already played and beaten the game. He was able to get the game 10 days before release. And so he posted videos describing the game kind of more in detail, and they were taken down, but there were mirrors available. But he specifically said that... like there was some sort of exploit that he could use so that he could kind of get in-game currency so they could upgrade things and get to the end of the game within 30 hours. So I don't know. I don't know if that's bad news or not. But
that's certainly not as expansive as the most vocal fans of that game are hoping or making it seem, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of people, or maybe some people, wanted the game to just kind of go on forever.
Right.
Did it dimensionalize how big the exploit is? Because I remember reading that, no, it's not like a bug or a glitch. This is actually just an arbitrage that you can find in the game. But is it like, do you have to farm this thing for, you know, 29 of the 30 hours, and then that gets you enough to just hyper jump to the center of the universe? Is it kind of a small boost over what you get? Like, I'm curious if it's increasing your funding by 10% and that gets you there, or by like tenfold and that's what gets you there.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I do know that it's like one specific item, and he got repeated instances of it and like sold it over and over again in order to upgrade his ship. Don't know if this is a negative or not, but the person who played it just kind of like listed his criticisms of the game with the hopes that maybe they can patch it on day one.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Of course, it's kind of a bummer that it's not like a more glowing review of the game. But yeah, I don't know.
So maybe there's a day one patch. Maybe there is something else that is kind of landing on this. I kind of wonder. So like $16,000 is an awful lot of money to change hands, especially to enrich somebody who apparently has broken some kind of agreement. I kind of wonder if the developers or publisher will take action on that.
Yeah, the article says that the main developer of the game, I forget his name, Sean Murray, tweeted to people to not watch his videos, like going into more details about the game, which that makes sense to try and.
Well, he just wants to sell more copies of his game.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't want to. You know, the game has probably a tailored way to reveal story to you, watching somebody play it. But
the other thing to consider is this: a person who is going to pay thousands of dollars for a 10-day advance copy of a game is probably also the type of person who is predisposed or already looking to find these kind of exploits.
Mm-hmm.
Like you or I are not going to pay thousands of dollars to get this game early because we're not going to, you know. So I could see him being some kind of like speedrunner personality or having the mindset going in of I'm going to break this thing, which led him to find it, which it sounds like it'll be easy to fix, and hopefully they do. And maybe if you're not specifically looking for that, how can I beat this as quickly as possible angle? It's way less or way more expansive, I should say. Yeah.
Or maybe 30 hours is enough time to play this game.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought as well.
I'm thinking like 30 hours is already on the really long side, and I understand everybody has their own metrics for that. But like hearing that even with this exploit that he found, which can, you know, you just change the math or you patch that out, like even with that makes it sound like, 30 hours is about what I'd be into. But everybody has different tastes and thresholds for that.
Yeah. I agree with that. One correction, he paid $1,300, not $1,600 for that, so I misquoted that. But yeah, he also mentions that he did the majority of the story as well. He didn't just try and do a speed run from the outset. But again, I don't know if that's necessarily a bad thing, but yeah.
That also seems like a game that would have like the story is, I'm just talking out of my ass here, but like my assumptions, I suppose, that would be like, okay, you do the story, you get there. That is like the nominal goal, but then there is just so much more you can do after it. Like that just, that seems like a weird metric to apply, to a game like that, like from title to credits.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Story versus atmosphere, hearkening back to last week.
Oh, man. You got anything else, Ben?
I got one happy ending that we can do. There's a game coming out for their Oculus or any VR called Everest. It's a $25 game. There's a few, it's like, I guess, mission type style game where you do hikes and there's like other characters. I'm not sure how, if the graphics are like made up or if they took like actual pictures or anything. I assume that they're some just animated in some way. Yeah. But you just go on these like hikes with other people, other climbers, and you like climb ladders and do things. And it's just a simulation of hiking Everest. And once you beat the game proper, you get a god mode where you can just like fly around and just look at the landscape. So it just seems like a really cool idea for $25.
That's very different than I was expecting. I was kind of hoping to hear that there was just like a 360-degree camera staked to the top of Everest that you could jack into. Because I would do that in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's just a exciting prospect of being able to like close the world, even make it even closer together with VR.
Well,
yeah.
There's ladders on Everest. You said something about climbing ladders.
Yeah, they use like ladders to get across like crevices. I don't know if it's crevices or crevasses.
Oh, okay.
Cole, you probably know that.
Drunk me has a very strong opinion on the pronunciation.
Does he?
So yeah, there's a whole, I insist that it's crevasse very vocally.
Yeah.
And even the most minor crack in the sidewalk becomes a crevasse.
Okay. I always picture a crevice as being like a little wedge, like a crack almost, and a crevasse is something that you must cross. You know, again, like the old nursery rhyme goes.
We can just avoid it and say a chasm. You can cross chasms.
Yeah. A ravine, an expanse.
Chasm just sounds slightly dirty to me, and I don't know why.
Does it sound like jism?
Kind of.
Yeah. That's what I go to. But yeah, this is one of those things like VR tourism that I would be totally down for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then if you play it in front of your AC unit,
it's like you're there.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you answer it. Who asked this question?
This one, Dennis. Was me.
Okay, cool. I've gotten in trouble by assuming. Dennis, what's the question that you've asked the nice people?
No, it's true. We've got a nice little tag team going on now. It's a multiplayer about multiplayer, specifically PvP versus PvE. So given the choice, do you prefer competitive or cooperative multiplayer interactions? Do you find you have the same attitudes towards competition and cooperation in real life as you do in video games?
Yeah, and I'm going to get us started with Davey, who says, given the choice, I will always prefer cooperative play. Many of my best gaming memories are of time spent in the same room as my friends or family working toward a common goal. A good cooperative experience can make even a bad game worth playing! Exclamation point. I was worried I didn't sell it enough to just straight read. I'm sorry, my voice is ragged at this point. My throat is nothing but raw meat. Filled with hornets and bees. Davey continues, I absolutely feel the same way in daily life as I do about my games. I would always prefer to work alongside someone to a common end rather than compete against them. Yeah. It's a very virtuous stance that you're taking. Yeah, that's a very virtuous stance. I think you're protesting too much, honestly. Maybe you're compensating for something. I think maybe you've slashed a couple people's tires.
So I'm guessing your answer is going to be competitive, Cole.
No, I just assume the worst in people. So I'm cooperative. I'm just not very good at it. Jala, what does Sam say?
Sam says, cooperative with friends, competitive with strangers. Also, I can only have fun in a PvP game if it's fun while losing, which is why I love Overwatch and Splatoon, but have zero interest in Counter-Strike or other long-running games where I'm just going to get steamrolled over and over again.
League of Legends.
Why would you sign up for 45 minutes of being shit on? I mean, unless
I ask myself that every time I play.
I mean, unless that's what you're into, you know, it's whatever. Yeah. Oh man, I wonder if I can get Splatoon cheap. With the Wii U kind of going down the circling the drain, I want, you know, just like what I wonder is like if basically every Wii U game I wanted was $30, I would buy it. But because Nintendo is Nintendo, I'm sure it's going to stay at 60, which is a problem.
I'm wondering if they'll pull some kind of thing where the NX has like backwards compatibility or something like that.
I've heard
just as like an apology for the Wii U.
I've heard shit like the NX is going to have like cartridge based play or some shit.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Look, man, if you told me the Wii original, the Wii Prime was going to have, you know, magic wands for controllers before it came out, I wouldn't have believed it either.
But that's that goes the other way. Magic wands sound awesome. Cartridges don't sound very good at all.
They're targeting the hipster,
I suppose.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say is anything is possible,
I suppose. Ben, what does Ollie say?
Ollie says, if it's PvP versus PvE, then I always prefer the latter. That's PvE. But if the choice is between fighting other people or joining forces with them, I much prefer cooperating. It's so much fun to get a mate and take on the hordes of whatever game you're playing. As for real life, I think I am insanely competitive. I hope not in an aggressive way, but if I hear about a friend doing something, I always think, can I do that? I'm going to do that. And then work hard to do it. Playing sports balls, I've been told I'm aggressive. I hope I'm not too bad.
I can say that Ollie got inspired to get back into his running because I started running and he like totally kicks my ass at running. And so like we have this friendly competition where I'm like, Jesus, I'm gonna get there one day, Ollie. Don't you wait. Just you wait. I'm gonna get you one of these days and whatever. So he's like, but I can do this thing. I know you're gonna get to where I'm at with this thing, but I can still do this thing.
That's surprising, Jala, because you've got all the runnings. In fact, behind your back, I call you Jala Cool Runnings Prentice.
No. He is like super fucking fast. Like he's marathon man. Well, not really. Like he's sprinter man. Right. Marathon man would be Trent, who's in our Slack. Mm-hmm. So anyway, like he's marathon man. He did the Boston Marathon this year. But anyway,
oh, shit.
Yeah. So anyway, like Ollie is Mr. Sprinter Man and whatever, and Mr. Sports Ball Guy. So. Yeah.
Hmm.
But yeah, like he can be somewhat competitive, but like not in a bad way. Like at least not with me. And maybe that's good because if he got like bad competitive with me, there would be a fight. We have a throwdown. It doesn't matter that he's in Ireland, okay? Like, there's gonna be a throwdown.
That's pretty good. Well, it sounds like it's a force for good in his life, though. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Dennis, what does Graham say?
Graham says, in real life, I have a competition in me that comes from feeling inadequate for most of my life, but I aim for healthy methods of dealing with that. With video games, I do not care about competing with real players, but rather just deal with the narrative challenges the developer set forth for me. The big reason why I don't like PvP is because developing an adequate skill level takes a lot more patience and time than I'm willing to give. Additionally, many multiplayer modes are very repetitive, like deathmatch games where you run around a single arena shooting people for 10 minutes. I prefer co-op because computer opponents are more palatable obstacles to overcome, and many of my favorite co-op experiences are just single-player campaigns with the ability to play with friends.
Yeah, I agree.
Very self-aware post.
Yeah, and I gotta give them thumbs up. We co-op stuff. Yeah, Graham.
Yeah, I believe I've co-oped with him as well.
Yes, we've done some things with the people.
But we've also done competitive, right?
Like what?
Night Squad?
Oh yeah, well that doesn't really count. I mean, like I guess it does, but it's so silly that nobody is good at that game.
It's a good way to look at it.
That's funny.
So anyway,
yeah, you guys have all the inside scoops on these. Like you're fact checking them as they go along.
That's right. Totally.
Yeah.
I'm involved with the people.
Let's see here. Paul writes, and I believe this is one of the Pauls, one of the too many Pauls who I met. Based on the profile picture, I did not learn Paul's last name. I'm sorry if this is not the correct Paul that I'm referring to. He didn't really stick around.
He lives in Austin. He's just one of too many Pauls.
One of the too many Pauls. There yes. we go. So he does live in Austin. So, hey, Paul, it was nice to meet you. let's see here. Says PvE or co-op. I just had this conversation with a coworker who likes competitiveness. They are even competitive with Pokemon Go. I never want the stress of competition in games, and almost never in real life, unless I'm submitting to an art show, since there's no way around it. Then it's all out competitiveness, but I don't enjoy it.
Fist bump.
Yeah, I don't know how you guys do that. Do you deal with the competitive nature of that?
Well, the thing about it is that, like, when it comes to art, like, everybody just has a very different style, and really you're kind of catering to whatever the particular judge likes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, that's not necessarily indicative of how good or bad the art is, just what that particular judge likes. And mm-hmm. I mean,
that's not an art competition, it's a pander competition.
It is. It really is. Because, I mean, you know, yes, they can try to judge impartially, but they're human. They will have bias, you know, so.
Yeah. And, you know, call me crazy here. I don't know that there is such a thing as an objective evaluation of a subjective art you know, kind of thing.
Exactly. So,
yeah. So another vote, like everybody, like we're voting straight co-op PvE on this. I want to mm-hmm. see if we can eventually get to somebody who's like, yeah, I want to really stick it to people, just jam it between the fifth and seventh ribs, you know, fuck it. let's see. Jala, what does Dustin say?
Dustin says, it depends on the game. In Dark Souls, I enjoy jolly cooperation, but in games with dead AI, such as Gran Turismo, I prefer PvP. In life, I'm pretty laid back, not very competitive. I couldn't care less about team sports. Very introverted. Most more driven towards hobbies like skateboarding and art.
Yeah.
Well, I can agree. Like, if the AI sucks, like, you need somebody that's going to make it interesting. Like, you know, the game could have the greatest mechanics ever, but if the AI is crap, you don't want to play it unless you got somebody else to play it with.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, for sure.
I can see that. So this is the thing. It's been so long since I played a Gran Turismo game that, like, they didn't have online play. Like, the last Gran Turismo game I played was 3, I suppose, on the PS2. So when he said that, I was like, brr? But yeah, totally. They would totally have online play. And that's been my story. Ben, what does Michael say?
Michael says, co-op all day. My work doesn't allow me much chance to help people, but I'm a helper by nature. Games are a great platform for making someone's life a little better. Power leveling, free loot, or nuggets of wisdom, I'm your guy.
Hey, dude, what do you play?
I can fact check this because Mike has been helping me get through Destiny, which I'll talk about more later. But
cool.
The nuggets of wisdom has been very, very helpful.
Yeah.
All the nuggets.
He is my Destiny Sherpa.
I always enjoy the stories of multiplayer philanthropists. Like
yes.
that. Mm-hmm. We get them occasionally on Bonfireside Chat, where somebody will talk about they got this co-op person who dropped plenty of items for them and things like that.
I'm gonna hook you up.
Yeah, or in Dark Souls 3, there's a specific faction that can either be helpful or hostile, or one than the other. And just kind of like being walked through an entire level by somebody who could possibly kill you at any moment. you know, that is always amazing. Like I have benefited from those people's largesse, and it's amazing to see them, to see that personality type.
Yeah,
I've been that person in various games before where I'm like, I'm gonna hook you up. I got you.
Well, you're just very generous with your time and attention in a lot of ways, not just in games.
But it's because I like people.
I know. I said that as a good thing. I'm sorry if it came across like it wasn't. Yeah. Let's see. Franz says, my only PvP experience is in the Dark Souls series and all. And all invaders are, by definition, either sadists or psychopaths. I take exception to that. So I prefer PvE. Sunbrowing is just what a harsh environment like Lordran needs. I also like some MMOs. Secret World, Guild Wars 2, wow. But to me, those are just single player, or if my wife also plays two player co-op RPGs with really weird NPCs.
That's great. And again, the distinction between co-oping with friends or, you know, playing online with friends and playing online with strangers.
Yeah. Yeah. With I believe the children are calling them pubbies.
Oh, is that right?
Maybe. I don't know.
We need to straighten these children out.
That's what we called them in EverQuest 10 years ago. So, grains of salt. Not even that. Fucking 15 years ago. Fuck me. Oh, my God. Oh, my skin is turning to ash.
Dude, I just turned 34. Don't even talk to me.
I know. I think that we're all on the same journey.
Your lived experience is valid in that we all find it equally as long.
Yeah. That's really good. Is that you, Dennis?
That is me. That is an original.
Pretty good.
Good job.
Yeah, 100%.
Or is equally longer than we expect, or something like that. I'll workshop it.
Yeah. Let's see here, Jalo. What does Lionel say?
He says, "Why not both? Nintendo Land 1v4 player stuff is probably the most fun I had in any multiplayer game. It had some really creative stuff. If you dismissed it when it came out, don't worry. PlayStation VR is ripping it off, as they usually do. So there's your chance to try asynchronous multiplayer minus the creativity."
Hmm.
Is it asynchronous or asymmetric? And I mess these up all the time.
Asymmetric in this case, where somebody has one view, incomplete information. Asynchronous would be something like, what's that strategy game you really like? Fractal something?
Oh, Frozen Synapse.
Yeah, Frozen Synapse. There we go.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'm not putting you on blast. I can call back to episodes where I've finished recording, been falling asleep at night and gone, shit, I meant to say the other one.
No, definitely not. Like we understood what you meant, Lionel. So yeah. Language is about communication. None of this is a correction.
Hmm.
Yeah. No, that's like any of those things are really great. Mm-hmm. I have that. I have Nintendo Land. I think I got it free with my Wii, but I've not had a chance to play it, and I want to.
It faded faster than I expected, but Evolved would kind of fall into that category as well, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like the long sad story of Evolve.
Anything with that kind of juggernaut mode.
Yeah. Weirdly enough, I'm super excited about the upcoming Friday the 13th game, specifically because of that, and then also Jala, the game you've been pushing for us to play, Damned. Has something like that too, right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yay!
Yeah. Who just read that? I lost track on my sheet.
That was me.
That was you. So yep. Ben, what does David say?
David says, "In games, I prefer PvE over PvP, but will PvP if I'm playing on the same side as my friends, or it's a quick party game like Jackbox. I'm a very competitive person and can often ruin the fun for me if I get too focused on winning."
I can vouch for that. He's got that undercurrent going for him. He totally does.
I love how much better you guys know these people than me. By which I mean I feel like a bad dad. Oh, pretty good. Yeah, I don't know how Jackbox fits into that. That feels a little bit like whenever I've played that and I want to play it so much more. Oh my gosh, guys, I would love to have a standing Jackbox night.
Oh, that'd be great.
That'd be really good. I would love to do that. Whenever I've played it, it always feels a little bit like a Whose Line, you know, the points don't matter kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or really the game is who can get the most likes.
Yeah, yeah. Like for me, I don't care if I win. I just want to make people laugh.
Yep.
Which that might as well just be like on my coat of arms. Dennis, what does David say?
David says, "Playing WoW on and off over the years, I always leaned more into the PvE side of the game. My friends and I always wanted to get into the raids as soon as possible, and any PvP we did was just for fun. We never really got into the competitive aspect of the battlegrounds or arena. However, as far as console games, my friends and I always enjoy playing a multiplayer game such as Call of Duty or World of Tanks by handing off the controller between games and working together towards acquiring upgrades and improving our skills at the game." Oh, that's really interesting. So it's like a co-op within friends as you do competitive. And at first time contributor, long time listener. Hey, dude, You may have seen my name as Chaotic Toast. I do recognize that name.
Yes, I do.
Very cool. Hey,
yeah, no.
Thanks fantastic. For writing in, dude.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Man, that reminds me of like a time. So, this is a weird story like with my dad and my uncle. So my uncle lived out of state and would come up and would bring his N64 with GoldenEye, and we would spend just like these long summer days, playing GoldenEye, you know, N64, like the 007 game. And, we didn't like to play against each other, right? Like we had a couple of controllers, but that wasn't the fun. What we would do is we would just take turns passing the controller around. You know, here I am like 10 years old, maybe. And my dad and my uncle, there as well. And we would just run different levels and like try and see who could get the most headshots, because at the end of each level, there would be like this little stat breakdown, right? Of, you know, these different things. And we would push for like different metrics depending on different levels. And that was always so much more like engaging to me than like running up against somebody else, because like,
and
go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Oh, go ahead.
No, just like you couldn't like, you know, fuck with that. Like you just had to run the level perfectly and hope that you got the right role, as opposed to, you know, like playing against each other. So like we would, it was almost like playing darts with each other or something like that. Which,
so that would count as asynchronous multiplayer,
I suppose. Yeah. It's, I mean, like, or it's almost like golfing with each other or something like that, you know,
yeah.
Where just, you're trying to, you know, you're all like doing the same thing separately, but, seeing how you compare in the end. Yeah. David, your story really resonated with me. That dug up a memory I haven't thought about in years.
Well, I've already mentioned it like multiple times before, but the way that I like it, 'cause I played fighting games a lot. You know, years ago, and when I would, you know, like the boyfriend of the time and then all of his dude friends would get together and then they'd start like shitting on each other and, you know, doing that whole thing that guys do when they get super competitive, you know, and I didn't want to be any part of that. But like when it was just me and him, we would go through and play Capcom versus SNK2 and just both pick characters and then just turn up the AI as high as it would go and then fought the computer and then just work to, you know, like co-op the whole thing and, you know, be on the same side and just hand the controller back and forth when our character died or whatever. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we ended up, like, I ended up getting really, really good at that game just because he was good at the game and we kept on cranking up the difficulty level until we were at the highest tier. And, you know, like, I got really good at that, but it was fun and it wasn't the same kind of pressure that you get, like, when you're fighting people. And especially since he had been playing fighting games way longer than I had, he was a lot better at it initially until it got to the point where I was actually pretty good and I could beat him. It wouldn't have been fun if we were fighting each other because he would just beat the shit out of me every time, you know, at least until I got to that point where I got better. But like, you know, that wouldn't have been fun. So
Well, it's one of those things where like when you're not playing and you're just observing and you can kind of talk as they're going through it, like it's easier to learn. Like, you know, that's better for closing a significant gap than it is, you know, just kind of like going up against somebody and having them, you know, just fuck you up the entire time. Like, you know, you can only get better than somebody by going against them and learning, you know, learning from them. But you're right, like fun plays a huge role in that.
And it's kind of the same thing that what Graham said, you know, where he was just like, you know, there's a lot of effort and time that's required to get good at PvP things, because there are people who just like dedicate themselves doing nothing but PvP in all these different games. And like, you know, like that's not fun when there's, you know, like this difficulty spike that you just can't overcome unless you just spend hours and hours playing it. Like, I'm not that invested in getting beaten a million times to get to the point where I'm not dying all the time, you know. Like, I'd rather do something else.
So we've gone all the way through all of these a couple times here. We're up to time. We've gotten a lot of like long responses here.
I think reading through right now, it was 100% co-op over PvP. A couple people, like I think Ollie did, recognize like in real life they tend a little more competitive, but
I
think it was 100%.
Well, cool. I mean, it's probably the first unanimous thing we've had.
Yeah.
So thank you everybody for writing. I'm so sorry if we didn't get to your response, but such is the notion of not wanting to record all night, but we really appreciate it. I don't know how to not feel bad about this. Let's go through ours. I'll hit mine real quick. I'd prefer just PvE and not playing with anybody because I don't like feeling an obligation to anybody to always be there. So with that in mind, I actually, like, if given a choice between PvP and co-op, I'll almost always go PvP. Like, I would rather PvP somebody and kind of like make their day bad on purpose than co-op with them and make their day bad on accident by being bad.
Oh, wow.
I don't know how, but that logic makes perfect sense.
And this goes way back to, like, you know, just playing
Portal 2.
Yeah. Yes, to the time I made somebody rage quit Portal 2 by being too dense. This goes way back to, like, EverQuest and WoW and stuff, where I would always play on, I would have a character on an RP server, and that was my main, but I would always have PvP, so I could just kind of, like, just come out of nowhere and just make somebody's day bad, because, like, that was a different way to engage with the game, right? But yeah, I'd much rather play alone, unless it's something like a rhythm game. Like, some of the best multiplayer experiences I've had have been, like, with Rock Band or whatever, and that,
Oh, sure.
It's everybody's kind of doing their own thing, but it is a cooperative experience that extends beyond just the game and the mechanics that are there. So that feels
kind of all agreeing to, engage in the same fantasy for a bit.
Right, right. And in real life, I am pathologically non-competitive. I think the deli counter where everybody draws a number is way too competitive. Yeah. So that probably lends a little bit of insight into what a small sad man I am.
Aww, you're not small, you're very tall. Everybody at the con was tall.
Yeah, just so many comments about people's heights. Jolly, I want to hear your answer, because you really relish in playing multiplayer with people.
Well, I already gave my answer about, like, my way of circumventing actually fighting against people in fighting games. I don't really, like, it's weird. I like playing fighting games. I don't really like fighting against people very often, because then too, like, with that, there's always that issue of you have to be on the same skill level, or else it's just not fun. And, mm-hmm. Like, if you happen to find somebody who is at your level, then that's cool. Otherwise, it's really not even a competition, So, but insofar as PvE, yeah, I totally prefer PvE to doing anything versus. And that's just because I like socializing with people. It's my, playing games together with others is the way that I interact with humanity when I'm not busy running and making art and working and whatever else I'm doing. So, like, I don't even sit down and watch movies unless I've got somebody with me, because, like, I think it's kind of like a waste of my time personally. Like, I'd rather be doing something else, like, mm-hmm. with myself. Yeah. Something that I feel is productive, but, like, I'll sit down and watch movies, or I'll play games with people more so than if I, set out to do it myself. I think that's probably another reason why I end up playing so many indie games or shorter games, is because that's, like, something that I have to do by myself most of the, for all of those independent games. If I'm not playing mm-hmm. with people, I'm not gonna devote as much time to it. But, like, if I have somebody to go through it, I will soak up all the time. It's kind of like Resident Evil 6. Which I'm playing through with Sam now, some other people who were like, oh yeah, I've got that game, we can play it sometime. And I'm like, that's fine. I'll co-op this game with multiple people at the same time. I don't care. So, I've put millions of hours into that game, and I will keep putting those hours into that game because I have people who are playing it. But, like, I would not have been playing it this long if it weren't for that co-op element,
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, you definitely wouldn't have had a reason to do the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that all makes sense. Mm-hmm. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, so in trying to think about this, I think the games that I enjoy most are competitive games, like Rocket League or Modern Warfare or Super Smash Brothers, things like that. So I think the like highest, you know, feelings of like being engaged with the game come from those types of games for me. But I mean, I can also appreciate cooperative games like Left 4 Dead. But yeah, I think for me, I'm more of a PvP guy, kind of guy. So, yeah. But I mean, I guess all those games kind of have team elements, so it's kind of a gray zone, I guess.
So. Yeah, it's person with person with person versus person with person with person.
Yeah. PWP, yeah. PWV. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't say we're supposed to also answer about like if we think that's a reflection of how we are in life. I'm overall not really competitive, except every once in a while something will like really get under my skin. Like I'm friendly competitive, like with Ollie, where I'm like, one day, Ollie, I'm gonna catch you. I don't know when the hell that's gonna happen because you're really damn fast, but I'm gonna catch you one day, you know. And like with David Petroco, you know, who said that he's got this undercurrent of competitiveness, like he's the reason he's one of the reasons I started doing running in the first place. So like, you know, he's like, I'm now doing a triathlon, you know, like, and I'm like, I'm going to do a triathlon too sometime, you know, like that kind of like back and forth kind of exchange. But otherwise, other than that, or like that time that Dennis decided he wasn't going to be in our marathon challenge team. and then I got really competitive and I'm like, you're going to fucking go down. Like other than that, I'm not really all that competitive. It's just every once in a while. So,
yeah,
but I do have a little streak that'll pop up every once in a while. It's just not often. So Ben, how about you? Like, how competitive are you?
I think I'm very competitive with things that don't matter, like board games or video games. But like, I don't think I'm competitive outside of that as much. I think I usually think more team focused in like life decision sort of things. Hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Dennis, round us out here.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love me some co-op, and I, you know, any chance I get to play a co-op game, I will. But I think I have a special place in my heart for competitive as long as I feel like I'm at a disadvantage. It's a really weird thing where, as long as I feel like the odds are stacked against me, or as long as I feel like even equally matched, I'm happy to go all out and you know, try as hard as I can. I get a lot of fun out of that. The second I feel like I'm crushing someone, there's just this natural instinct in me to like back off a little bit. And I don't, maybe that means I'm not competitive, but I always kind of gravitate towards, if I'm looking at a competitive class based game, ooh, what's the least played character? I'm going to pick up that character and figure out how to use it. Or in Hearthstone, I'm like always trying to make a weird, crazy non-meta deck work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I love, like I said, feeling like the stakes are high in competitive games that have like a ranked and an unranked mode. I'm always almost surprised by how reluctant other people are to jump into a ranked mode. Whereas I'm like, yeah, that makes it more intense. Let's do that. Like, let's put some money down. Let's go. but again, the second I feel like it's just a stomp, I kind of start feeling bad for the other guys. Yeah. So maybe, you know, you guys decide where that puts me on the co-op to competitive.
Well, spectrum. You're also the same person who like decides you're going to, you know, do the absolute hardest mode and try to do these ridiculous things. Like you just like the challenge of it and idea of fighting.
Going back to the AI thing, like I think that a human opponent is always going to provide a much more interesting challenge than an AI ever could. So I don't know if that makes me competitive or not.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like you're always going to jockey to be like the underdog, right?
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Which in a way is far less considerate than actually engaging people on a real term, right? Because if you say, okay, I'm going to tie one hand behind my back, you know, just to make this fair. That just makes me feel bad.
Crush you with my eyes closed.
Exactly. Yeah. And of course, I'm
which
just,
means
I'm
you
just
know
80% joshing.
Of the time I'm going to lose, but you know that 20% is going to be just glorious.
Yeah. So I've created profiles for all of us. I am a petty dilettante. Jala, you are you're kind of a rising tide raises all boats, kind of like philanthropist, helping people along. You know, Ben, you are a constructive competitor, and Dennis, you're on a search to improve yourself.
There you go.
Yeah.
It's the new Myers-Briggs.
Are you a Dennis? Are you a Cole? Are you a Jala? Are you a Ben? Man. So thank you, everybody, for writing in. I'm sorry we didn't get to everybody. But if you want to participate in these, like us at Facebook. That's facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. And those go up on Tuesday afternoons, usually, thanks to either Dennis or Jala.
Mm-hmm. Yay!
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing over the past week or so. Dennis, in your case, it's been a period of time or so.
It's been like a month. Yeah.
Regale us.
Oh man! So first off, I have to talk about my hardware woes.
Oh god!
Shortly after we recorded the last episode that I was on, my graphics card died.
Oh shit!
Oh,
was that the was that the thing whose fan was going on the fritz?
No, so the motherboard fan was going on the fritz, and that worked just fine. I have, and it continues to work just fine. I have no idea why the graphics card died. I have to, maybe it's a little bit of a shame on me thing because I bought it off of Craigslist. Mm-hmm. And I did the obligatory, like, I couldn't not text the guy and be like, "Hey, graphics card died. Can you make it right?" And he gave me the. Of course he did. Hey, you bought this over a month ago, and I'm not responsible for that.
Yeah.
And then I felt like a loser. But so that put me on the PC upgrade treadmill already.
Yeah.
The thing I said I was not going to do, I completely did.
Oh, no. So
I went. What graphics
card was in that, and what'd you go up to?
Yeah. So I went from a Radeon 5800.
Okay.
To a GTX 950. Which that was gibberish to me as well. I'm just parroting the numbers that I saw on the screen.
So but you went from one that's like four generations ago to one that is like one generation ago.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. So the people in the know tell me that it's a pretty significant jump. I, you know, since have started and played all the games that I was playing before, and they're on the normal graphics settings or the high graphics settings. I'm like, it's so pretty. Love it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that is quite nice, but that knocked me out of commission, on PC at least for a solid 2 weeks.
Oh no.
Which is, I could run the computer by plugging directly into the motherboard and it worked just fine.
Oh, but then you just have like integrated graphics and that's no good.
Exactly. Yep.
You're back to the problem you have with your MacBook.
Yeah, basically. So so I've, you know, fixed that problem. I'm definitely got the warranty on this new graphics card.
Yeah.
But I'm very pleased with it. And that is my first foray into PC hardware upgrading. And I survived. I'm alive. Yeah. I came out the other side all right.
Yeah, the 950 or the 960 would be what I would upgrade to if I was going to do that right now. So you've got like a really good card.
And
I mean,
just
because
judging
I have impeccable
looks,
taste. I realized how much of a dick I sounded like when I said that. I'm sorry, guys.
No, you're fine. By looks, the 950 has two big ass fans on the other underside of it.
Yep.
So I feel good about it not, you know, getting in the trouble. I'm like, that's, I don't know exactly how it works, but that much fan has to be a good thing, I think.
More fan equals better than.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my hardware story. Oh, other hardware thing is kind of perfectly timed.
I know, right?
With my graphics card dying. David left for San Francisco and he's doing a pretty intense program, didn't anticipate having a lot of free time, so he left his PS4 with me. And so I kind of swooped on over to that while my PC was dead, but led to, I think, my single favorite moment in Slack so far, where I was talking about, you know, having a computer or a PS4 that I got from a roommate. Or from a friend.
Former
and
roommate.
Someone pointed out, it's like, Cole's on vacation right now. Then it's like, you're right up the PS4.
Yeah.
And I wish I had been clever enough at the time to say, you know, I did take a door off its hinges to get to this. Because I was helping David move out and took his door off the hinges.
I saw that. So. I chimed in. I think I did like three exclamation points or something.
Yeah.
Like, I'm in Virginia, goddamn.
That just made my day. I want to say it was Phil Holmes, but he's kind of like my... go-to person for whenever anything clever is said that I can't remember who said
it.
Yeah,
there's something like clever and cutting that you didn't think would be a response to the thing you said. It gives you something unexpected. That is probably Phil.
Yeah, yeah. So, but yeah, so that absolutely made my day, and it gave me a PS4, so I'm very happy about that. Nice. Third, I guess it's I had the month of hardware here. Because I had a PS4, I tried PS Vita Remote Play so that I would have a second controller to co-op with. Mm-hmm. And guys, that works phenomenally.
Oh wow!
It is completely seamless. And I didn't notice any latency. I really did not have any issues, even though I was using the touch screen as a replacement for like the L2 and R2 buttons.
Uh huh.
That's not been a problem. It is phenomenally smooth.
Oh, cool. So, what are you playing co-op on that?
That'll lead me into my first game. Okey-doke. Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition.
Mm. Yeah.
And that was one of the PlayStation Plus games a long time ago. And that's getting a PS4. I now have like literally a year's worth of backlog of PS Plus games to play,
which is great.
I jumped into and am playing that co-op with my wife. Mm-hmm. And it is fantastic.
Talk about competitive.
My one big complaint, I guess I've got two. Okay, sorry, did I interrupt?
Oh, no, I interrupted you. I just said talk about competitive or competition.
Oh, yeah. it opens up and the tutorial is single player. So I'd like read online it was multiplayer, and I was like, oh yeah, let's do this. We got everything set up. I paired my Vita for the first time and it was working great. And then we start the game and it's like I can't figure out how to get her to join. And you have to play through probably 5 minutes of single player content before it lets you jump someone else in, which just it feels weird. Like at the end of the day, it's no great loss and you're not doing that much in the tutorial anyway, but it's an odd choice to me. Doesn't hugely detract, but just it could have been smoother.
Yeah.
The game itself, I don't know if anyone has played it, but it is really, really sleek side-scrolling combat. Simple, yep. You're mostly tapping the square button, mm-hmm. Alternating that with triangle for throws and circle for special moves.
It's smoothly animated combo based Metroidvania kind of thing. Like think of Clay did a Metroidvania.
Yeah, very much so. And I'm surprised by how much the combat moves play into the platforming. You can do all these things to, juggle your enemies and, all of those have traversal implications as well. So kind of furthering the Metroidvania aspect of things. Maybe Zelda gets thrown in there as well. When it's at its best, you kind of have these fighting areas where you're kind of going against a bunch of enemies, and then you have these platforming areas where you're using all the same moves, but to kind of move around the screen in creative ways, which is really cool that both of those things with the same set of moves feel natural and feel equally as fun.
Hmm.
They have some really, really interesting mechanics where you are dead and you are switching back and forth between the world of the living and the dead. There is an enemy on the other side of that. It's just the same map, different like color palette essentially.
Right.
And if there's an enemy, if you're on the world of the living and there's an enemy in the world of the dead, they just show up as a shadow and you can't hurt them, but they can hurt you.
Hmm.
You kind of have to flip back and forth between the worlds, to kind of take out enemies and be kind of mindful of who you need to be dodging and which world it's better to be in to take stuff out.
Yeah.
That leads me to my second complaint, which is they give you that power maybe like 5 minutes, not even, after they give you another power. One is mapped to L1, one is mapped to R1. And giving you them in such quick succession made it really confusing. And for a while, I was, accidentally pressing the wrong button. And the other power, whereas there's this like cool world switching power on the left side, the right side turns you into a chicken. And it is like for traversal, so you can like fit into small areas that you couldn't fit into otherwise.
Right.
But so here I am in the middle of these like intense fights, just constantly turning myself into a chicken. Like, what the? No, I don't want to do that. But
I'm a chicken, March. I'm a chicken. So they didn't like give you enough of a period of time to like establish one as like primary combat.
Yeah, no, there's like maybe one puzzle section with the chicken power, and then it immediately gives you the world swap power right on top of each other. So that, you know, that's smoothed out now for the most part, but I still, you know, will swap myself to a chicken in the middle of an intense fight.
Yeah, well, I mean, just, you know, like, they didn't give you the chance to develop muscle memory.
Yeah. But that, you know, it's a lighthearted game that adds to the chaos, and it's kind of funny to see your character pop into a chicken in the middle of a fight. Yeah. Especially if you're doing it co-op and you've got a partner that can kind of hold the fort while you figure out what the hell you did wrong. So that's been a lot of fun, and we'll continue playing that. It does a lot of referential humor, but I think they do it in the right way.
It's a lot of posters with memes in the background, right?
Exactly. So instead of having front and center, like, hey, I'm going to use this line from the movie. Everyone get it? Get it? Everyone catch that? All right, let's go. You know, it's just these little posters in the background, which reference like Castle Crashers and, you know, Homestar Runner and stuff like that. So yeah. I appreciated that. So that's Guacamelee.
That's pretty good. Yay! I'm happy to hear that the PSN network stuff has worked for you. I needed to try that again. Not the PSN, but the PS Vita. Just because it kind of didn't work as well as I would have wanted it to. But that could totally be like the vagaries of my network setup. Networking, like printers, are just my Achilles heel. And then also, apparently audio, if the lead up to this episode is anything to...
Not that that's important for you or anything.
I know, right? Moving on. What else you got, Dennis?
Yeah, so I also mentioned Destiny earlier, which was the other PS4 game that I kind of forayed into. I know we've talked about it before on the show, but I cannot believe how much I like that game. And that is not praise.
Does it just feel gross?
Going to last week's kind of atmosphere, story, and gameplay, the atmosphere and the story just so fall so incredibly flat. Mm-hmm. And this is the post Peter Dinklage patch. Mm. So this is like their optimized version of the game. And they're still just ridiculous, and it feels like, you know, an MMO storytelling kind of setup in its worst form, to where I really don't pay attention to it at all.
Yeah.
And atmosphere wise, you know, even though you've got these different worlds, which they really like set up to be like these hugely different landscapes, and like Venus is now this exotic jungle and Earth is these like, you know, blown out corridors, but it all just devolves into the same corridor shooty kind of environments. Like it's complete mental Teflon, and no single environment, even though they put them on paper to be very different from each other, sticks out in my mind.
Yeah.
Same thing with the different enemy factions. They all feel samey. Like the atmosphere just isn't there. Thank God the gameplay on this just feels so damn good.
Hmm.
And that's the saving grace of the game. Is just that, you know, it's Bungie doing what Bungie does best.
Yeah, and you've played a fair deal of Halo, right?
I have 1, 2, and 3 all the way through, and then a little bit of the subsequent games here and there. So it's definitely got that feel to it. One thing that was interesting that I had to get used to was just what a kind of sluggish, it almost feels like you're a barge moving through the world at first. Like your character is very, very deliberate in its movements, and that's stating it as positively as I can, to the point where I kind of modeled my stats towards agility to try to get that up. Because I was coming off of playing very rapid-paced shooters like Lonely Planet. Lovely Planet, and Overwatch, which are just very snappy and quick, and you jump around, and you can't do that at all in Destiny.
Yeah,
but again, it comes across as deliberate versus sluggish.
Right.
But you know, the different weapon types feel meaningfully different. It is a ton of fun to play with a friend, like I mentioned, playing with Michael. And just working together on taking out a swarm of enemies feels good. And that's what keeps me coming back and playing as long as I have. So I've gotten up through level I want to say I'm like 21 or 22 right now. And the level cap is now 40. It started at 20, but it's moved up to 40.
Yeah, so you're past the initial cap.
Past the initial cap. I think they rebalanced the XP to scale a lot faster. So I imagine that the second half will like take me twice as long as the first half or something like that. But it's just good times with friends. It feels good to play, and I can check my brain at the door, which is sometimes what you want at the end of the day.
Yeah. So what's your intention with this? Like, are you going to be going on through the, I feel like I'm talking to somebody who's like,
are you
dating my daughter? My daughter is Destiny.
Look, I've already been to second base and your daughter has a stripper name. So we all know where this is going.
Oh God, that's so awful.
Sorry to all the Destinies who are listening right now.
Yes.
I honestly don't know, because initially my thought was, you know, great, I've got a PS4, I can now play Bloodborne and Dark Souls 3, because those were two of the games that David has.
Oh shit. You can play Bloodborne.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I want to talk with you about that so much.
But I kind of asked on the Bonfire Side Chat Slack channel and said, hey, I have not played the DLC of Dark Souls 2. Should I go just barrel straight through into Bloodborne, or should I go back and, you know, I'm going to play everything, but where should I go first? And the consensus seemed to be that, hey, it'd be worthwhile to go and see the DLC. People had very nice things to say about it.
Yep. I said as much when I dropped it off at your office this morning, like the DLC is top shakes.
Exactly. So I'm going to go do that. That also makes it so that I can have continuity on Bonfire Side Chat, the podcast, because I stopped listening when you guys got to the DLC. God, how many years ago was that?
2 years.
Yeah, craziness. So I have a nice, sweet Bonfire Side Chat backlog to keep me company as I play those games.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy it. You've already played the main body of Dark Souls 2, so you don't have to worry about us misleading you. We've had a lot of people say, like, man, this Dark Souls 2 season is all wrong. It's like, no, because they changed the game. Like, it's not our fault. They invalidated our whole season.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, Dark Souls is that type of game where knowledge compresses space so much that I anticipate being able to get through to the point where the DLC is relevant fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Now watch the game stand up and smack me in the mouth for saying that.
It's gonna do it. Like, that's what Scholar exists for. And you've said you're gonna stream this, right?
Yeah, I will. I mean, this and the PS4 is so friendly to streaming. I love it. Like, you click a button.
Yeah.
And I'm very comfortable streaming. I don't feel bad looking, you know, stupid or anything like that if I'm bad at the game. So if I'm playing on PS4, I'm generally streaming.
Cool.
And I thought about, you know, maybe I can do some kind of consistent time for it. I don't think I would ever can find myself playing the game only at that time, but I might commit to playing at a time and just say, you know, I'm going to be playing the game. I might have advanced a little bit here and there in between, but we'll see. I don't have the plans for that nailed down yet, but I hope to share that as much as possible.
I think people understand.
Yeah. I don't have to explain myself to you guys, even though I just did. So that, yeah, that's, to wrap that back around, Destiny was supposed to be filler until I could get the Scholar of the First Sin DLC.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, thank you to Brian May for sending that along, Dr. Static on Slack. I appreciate that so much.
Yeah.
And it is Sisterhood of the Traveling Souls, because I think he got the game off of DuckFeed. So it's making the rounds, and I would love to find someone to send it to after I finish. That could be nice.
So you should write just write the names of all the people who've had it before you in there, and then seriously, just like put it in like inside the liner, and just try and amass all of the names that you can on it.
I really like that idea. Cool,
go for it. Sounds like a good idea.
I don't know what I'm going to do with Destiny now, because I've got it now, and Scholar of the First Sin now.
Mm-hmm.
So do they continue in parallel? I guess it depends on how much I like Scholar of the First Sin.
Yeah. So you're playing pre-expansion Destiny, like you don't have any of the Iron King stuff. Not Iron King, that's fucking Dark Souls. What am I talking about, Ben?
Iron Banner.
Iron what?
There's Iron Banner. Iron Banner is a thing in Destiny.
Maybe.
I don't. Mustard I have King. The Taken King expansion.
Taken King. There we go.
So, yeah. The Taken King, Iron Banner, and then there's The Dark Below, I think. So I'm playing with all the DLCs except for they just announced a new one.
Hmm. Yeah, and that'll be like, season three coming out here in a couple months, probably.
Yeah. I've already finished The Dark Below expansion, and I really, really liked it. Like, it was probably my favorite series of quests so far.
Hmm.
Well, namely because you get to play with a big ass sword and smash people up. So namely because it was close to Dark Souls, I guess I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, like Bungie certainly knows how to do swords and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Saw this really cool like desktop light that was modeled after a Halo 2 sword that looked really good at Austin.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. A final game, and I just have to rave for a little bit, so just brace yourselves. I finally beat XCOM 2.
Oh shit.
And guys, it was glorious. Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Like the final mission, probably no less than 5 times, I seriously considered quitting because I was just like, there's no way that I can win now. I screwed myself. The odds are stacked so far against me and it's a long mission. I would rather kind of just start over from the beginning and try to correct some of my mistakes. But I pushed on through and somehow pulled a victory out of my ass in the most like amazing, satisfying, like crazy way possible. So I'm going to go into detail because I know there are some people who like XCOM 2 and maybe some of it will come through for you guys. But at the very beginning of the mission, I just got stupid, overextended myself, and lost a soldier right off the bat.
Oh, no.
So to start, I'm down a man, and that is significant in XCOM. Like, one soldier has a huge impact on the game either way. So there, I was like, maybe I should restart. But I was like, no, let's you know, see what this mission is all about. I don't know, you know, what I'm up against, so maybe I can just do some recon, get some intel before I reload. So I managed to press through and you kind of fight through waves of progressively easier enemies, weirdly enough.
That's weird.
Like you start out, it's like the stuff you saw most recently is what you're up against first. And then you go back to the earlier and earlier stuff that you see. And I guess spoiler warning for anyone who hasn't played the end of it, I won't get too specific about what happens, but you get to the very end, and it puts you into this battle where you have to kill these insanely powerful enemies or this insanely powerful enemy while there are just waves of enemies spawning on into the map, probably 2 waves of enemies per turn.
Oh, shit.
So you're just getting overwhelmed. And for reference, like one wave of enemies, you know, shows up in XCOM, and like the practice is you deal with that wave. You do not want to trigger a second wave until you've done that. And an encounter with a set of enemies might take 3 turns. And so just having these 2 waves a turn dumped on you time after time during this final battle is overwhelming. I'm already down a man. I managed to pull out a kill on this powerful enemy. And then I realized there's a little counter in the top right of the screen saying enemy 1 of 3. There are 3 of these bosses that I get to. And the next one only spawns when you've killed the one before it.
Oh, wow.
So 2 more of my soldiers go down after killing this first guy. So I'm down to 4 people on the team because you get an extra soldier for this final mission.
Mm-hmm.
So I realize I've got 2 more of these guys to go. I've already lost 2 more soldiers, 3 total. And again, I'm thinking like, there's no way in hell this is going to happen. But I managed to kind of just somehow scrap along and get this second guy into a bad place. And the way I'm able to do it is to use an ability on my sniper, which is actually named after Phil Holmes. Funny enough, this sniper was named after him.
Nice.
But called Serial, where you activate it at the beginning of your turn, and then as long as you make a kill with each action, it refunds that action. And so you can string together a bunch of kills as long as you have bullets for it. And you know, that keeps you going. So you can wipe out a bunch of people. And I get down to the final shot where I've wiped out, you know, several, not all, of the kind of lesser enemies. And I take the final shot at the big bad, the second big bad, and it misses on like a 98% chance shot. That is the most XCOM thing ever.
Oh yeah.
And I literally like shit out loud that I missed.
You shit out loud? And then
I shit out loud.
Okay.
Yes, I literally said shit out loud.
Oh, okay.
Because I missed. Like I was just, you know, I thought maybe there was a chance, but it just got taken from me. And then I see a little icon pop up, and eons ago, I had put a special part into Phil's gun, his sniper rifle, that gave it a 5% chance that an attack would cost no action.
Oh,
it had never
shit.
Triggered. It had never triggered up until this point in the game, and I had forgotten about it. And that gave me the extra shot I needed to take down number two.
Good job,
so that
Phil.
Gets me. Yeah, thank you, Phil. So then number three spawns in with two waves of enemies. And unlike going through the level where the enemies were kind of getting easier, and I think it was more of a thematic thing, like, hey, you're getting deeper into the thing, so there's easier enemies, or I don't know what. Now the enemies are getting harder. And so with this third thing, or third big bad, spawns in essentially like two other waves of big bads. Not the same enemy type, but like equal in difficulty. And I wind up just like, with the rest of the turn I had when he spawned, just positioning my soldiers to hide, like just hiding, like no strategy. I just need to be out of line of sight of these guys because I will die. I will lose everyone else. So that then, you know, they take their turn and I get a lucky miss shot on one of my soldiers that keeps him alive. That, you know, that happens. So that's not too big of a deal. But then it's my turn again. And I'm thinking like, there's no way I survive this. Unless I can like get a hit on this enemy with on the big bad with every single one of my soldiers. And even then it's not a guarantee because there's nothing that says the mission is going to end when you kill this third big bad. I might still have to clear everyone out, but I'm like, that's really, there's no way I'm going to live past this turn. And there's no way I'm killing more than one enemy. So what I need to do is I need to, you know, get, basically have every single one of my soldiers left hit and put a nice solid hit on this big bad. The problem is my soldiers are, again, scattered. I just hid with them, scattered across the map. But the big bad, it's one of its abilities that when it takes damage, it teleports to a different part of the map. And it's supposed to be a defensive thing, right?
Right.
That, you know, you put a hit on it and it just runs away from you.
Oh,
and then
did you get a good roll did he like run right into the line of fire?
You've got it. It lined up like that's normally defensive, but I was so scattered that I was like, maybe I can turn this to my advantage. So one by one, perfectly, like each turn, there was only one enemy that could put a hit on him, or only one soldier on my side that could put a hit on him, and he would teleport into the sights of another enemy to the point where final turn of my turn, I was able to run just to be in line of sight and put the final hit on him to kill him, and that ended the game, and I won. Like, holy shit! Like, I slept and I was on cloud nine. Just absolutely ridiculous.
You accidentally got him to zag when he should have zigged.
And just for a game that, you know, it's so much of it is procedural and the story is kind of light, just such an incredible, powerful story created you know, on its own through the gameplay there, that I still can't believe it. It was so perfect.
Yeah.
And it just confirming why I love that series.
You had no idea if your Hail Mary was going to be the end of it. Like, you just,
no. Yeah.
you made one last gasp and you got all the air you needed. That's great.
Yeah. Yeah. So I felt like I needed a cigarette after that. But that, so I've got to figure out what I'm going to do when I jump back in. I'm either going to do Iron Man. So all on one save at the current difficulty I'm at, or I'm going to try to jump up a level in difficulty and still allow myself to save in between missions. But we'll see. I kind of like, I went on such a high note. I don't know how I can match that again. So I'm in no hurry to jump back in.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome.
Ooh, yeah. Video games are fun, guys. I like video games.
Video games are fun. I agree.
That's me.
Cool.
Sorry, I feel like I shot my wad there. I don't know if everyone else had a light week. So,
oh, I totally did. Yeah. In fact, I will just come out and say all I played this week was some Pokemon Go, and not even a lot of that. it's one of those things, like, you think, hey, I'm going to go to a different town, I'm going to walk around, but then when you're walking with people, you don't want to play Pokemon Go. Like, you don't want to stop and say, hey, there's a Psyduck here. You know, maybe they would understand, but when you're walking on the surface of the sun, as Smash Mouth says, fashion is passion. It's one of those things. So I mostly just played it in the airports on the way to and from, and airports are a fantastic place to play Pokemon Go while you're waiting.
Were there a lot of shops there?
There were a lot of stops, and most of those stops had lures on them. Maybe it's because people had layovers, maybe it was the actual like restaurant owners and stuff like that, but like I'm waiting for my turkey pesto sandwich. And I'm catching enough Pidgeys to evolve into evolve my Pidgeotto into a Pidgeot, and all of that, and also walking up and down the Austin terminal enough to hatch a couple of eggs, you know, stuff like that. So the usual stuff that we've mentioned. I think people know what Pokemon Go is at this point, but I would recommend if you are not like actively playing it, like if you're dropping it right now. Which is understandable. If you're at an airport, it's a good way to get you to walk around there on a long layover. It's something to do, you know, something like that. At the con, I bought a pin that was Team Instinct, right? Which, you know, at the very least, it is a cool little Zapdos pin, and I love Zapdos. And wore it to work today. Had it on my sleeve. And I got a couple of fist bumps from people, and that was kind of cool. I was worried that people were going to, like, you know, just kidney punch me because I was dressed like a dork.
Only Valor would do that.
I don't understand. So Valor are the bullies? I've heard Mystic is bullies as well. I think everybody...
No, Mystic would just silently judge you and talk about you behind your back.
I think that's what everybody does with Instinct. Yeah. But that's really about it. I've been too preoccupied over the past week, so I feel like
doing cool shit, though.
I feel like I've failed you. But yes, we've doing cool stuff. I'll be better next week. Don't worry. and Ben, I know that you've admittedly played very little, but I want to throw off to you before we go to Jala.
I've similarly played little. I've played the Rocket League, so I've kept that up. I'm now at 240 hours.
Oh, God.
So that's getting some good playtime in. And then I figured out that you can... So I knew you could trade in items before, but for some reason I thought that you needed to have the exact same item in order to trade it in. Mm-hmm. So, like, you needed to have specifically 5 chef hats in order to turn it into something else. But that is not the case. Items are just ranked by how rare or common or uncommon they are, so you can cross trade in like that and it's fine. So I did that today and just upgraded that and got, I think, 1 very rare item, which is something that I've seen a bunch of other people have, so it wasn't that rare, but that was an interesting mechanic to figure out. So it's very similar to the Pokemon Go mechanic where just get a bunch of stuff and then call it down by a factor of 5 or 15.
Yeah. Hey Ben, a chef's hat, where does that go on a car?
On the top of it, of course.
So on top of the cab. Oh, so there's always the concern. Logically, I think that the headlights of a car should be the eyes, and so the hat should go on the hood. However, ever since cars came out, people have kind of just come to the same illogical conclusion that the windshield should be the eyes. And so meme image of if a dog wore pants, how would they wear them? I always wonder how a car would look like if it was wearing a hat.
According to Rocket League, it's always on the top of the car. So I think they prescribe to the cars theory of cars.
Oh, that's too bad.
I don't know.
240 hours.
That's with it. Yeah.
That's a lot. So like what's your social arrangement with that? Do you have like people that you play with, like a standing nightly thing?
Yeah, so I have friends from Vegas that I play with, and I have friends from Cincinnati that I play with, and just kind of jump back and forth between those people.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
My aerial game is on point.
can you quantify the aerial game? I assume that has something to do with The Little Mermaid.
No. But that that parallel is mentioned many times whilst playing.
Okay.
The idea of the aerial is that if you have a bouncy ball, like whether it's been hit up the side of a wall or someone's like done a chip shot or something like that, normally you have a certain height that you can jump to with your double jump. But instead, what you can do is if you use your boost, you can rock it into the air and try and hit the ball in midair.
Hmm.
And so it's pretty difficult to do because you have to kind of plan the trajectory of the ball and have to plan like your boosts accordingly. So it's kind of like more advanced tactic, but the people who are really good at the game are really, really good at it. And I am okay at it.
Yeah.
And then as a side, as a side note, Rocket League tournament is going on, I think August 6th and 7th in LA, but they're going to be streaming that. So that'll be going on the time that this podcast comes out.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Neat. Well, yeah, it sounds like the aerial stuff is something you have to have a knack for.
MacBook Air?
No, a knack for. I'm sorry, my voice is rapidly fleeing me. At this point, like all of my vowels sound like I'm frying bacon. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's something I think a lot of people are trying to do it. Like, it's interesting to see the skill level like gradually increase as you play the game.
Mm-hmm.
But then a lot of times what will happen is you'll have like six people all go for an aerial shot, and then it just rains down cars after everyone misses.
That's pretty funny. It's kind of like a Battlefield. Everybody thinks they can fly the plane. Yeah. Jolly, I want you to break my heart about Virtue's Last Reward.
All right. So when I was going to Nebraska and then to, you know, coming back and then driving to Austin, whatever, during the plane ride part of that, I was playing VLR and I got 8 to be continued in a row and 2 bad ends in mixed in there around stuff. So I, every time I was like, this has got to be the end of the to be continued, I found more. And more and more. And it got to the point where I was just so tired and hungry and hangry that I was just like, I was rage posting.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, I need to put this down and take a nap because I can't anymore. And while I was doing this, Gary had posted and he had said that he believes that this game is disrespectful of his time. But I actually don't agree with that
is Gary playing VLR?
He means like these games in general, like he's probably referring to 999.
Weird.
So anyway, he said that he feels as disrespectful of his time, but the progress that you make isn't suddenly undone or lost or anything. So I don't really feel that that's a true statement. And also, as much as like this setup where it keeps rerouting you and keeps rerouting you and keeps rerouting you, like it drives me fucking crazy, I still believe that this is the best way for them to share the type of story and, you know, make the kind of point that they're trying to make with this game.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't happen to like that design. I like the story that comes out the other end. I really don't like the vehicle that's getting me to that story.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the problem is that like, I don't know. There's the kind of back and forth where I'm like, I don't know if I just, cause I'm 21 or 22 hours into the game at this point. I have put a lot of time into this game. I have been rerouted the entire time except that once.
Yeah.
So like, you know, that's a lot of time to be putting into this game and still be like not getting anywhere. I mean, I guess I am sort of, but it feels like I'm treading water. Like it doesn't feel like I'm getting a payoff because I'm not seeing a resolution, you know?
Yeah.
All the same, like, I don't know if I should set it down for a while and come back to it later after I've had a breather, or if that would make me just completely forget everything that was going on. Like, I don't understand, Dennis, how you can, like, set down VLR for long spans of time and come back to it. Like, how do you even remember anything that was going on?
Yeah.
The answer is I don't.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. Okay. So that's my problem. It's like, the thing is I want to see the rest of the game. And like, I keep on saying to myself, surely there won't be any more to be continues. And I keep finding them anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. Like, the order in which I played this must be the exact opposite of the right way to do this, whatever that right way is. Like, I just picked the complete opposite way to do this. And I got to the point where I was like, you know, talking to people in the Slack, and I'm like, this game is making Danganronpa 2 look like appealing by comparison to, and you know, I was already really mad at Danganronpa 1 for some of the things that it does, but the irritation that I have with the design of this game far exceeds the irritation that I have with the you know, tropes being played into in Danganronpa. Like, yeah. I like the way Danganronpa plays way better than I like this, but overall I like the story in this better than I like the story in Danganronpa. So, like,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, oh man, this is kind of rough. Yeah.
That's the hard thing. Like, I didn't see what Gary posted. I definitely don't think this is disrespectful of people's time, because, you know, even if you don't get like the actual resolution at the end of all these paths, there are 18 endings and only one of them can be the true end, right?
18 endings and I've only seen
But like, again, when the tumblers yes, start falling into place, it's hard to argue yes. I don't like this.
Oh no, here's the thing. I wasn't like I was just going, oh my god, there's 18 endings and how many goddamn to be continues have I seen. Like, I'm not like arguing. I was just like I can't believe this. I faint on a Shay lounge somewhere because this is too much.
And so I get defensive about this just because I just like, I feel responsible for you going through this because I said like, hey, this is a good game. I still think it's a really good game. Like, and I don't know if that's like, I don't know if that's like the calluses I built up around horror games or something like that.
I don't know, just
with, you know, with the ability to like tolerate failure, but like, you know, everything that you're seeing up until they, you know, kind of blue ball you is giving you information. It's still more story. It's not like it is like putting you into an absolute fail state that is saying nothing is to be gained by this.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's why, you know, when Gary did say, you know, that he felt that it was disrespectful of his time, I'm like, not really. It's still irritating as shit to me personally, but I don't agree with that assessment. In either case, I don't remember having this lockout issue when I was going through 999 on iOS, and I don't know if it's because of the port or if it just didn't come up as much, like the incident level of having to be rerouted just wasn't a thing. I don't know which of those that is.
999 is a far simpler game. The story is just not as complex. There are just not as many moving parts in this. I'm not saying complexity is a good thing. I'm not saying that didn't rise to the art that this one does. Like, it's not that. I'm just saying like this one, like the, you know, it is playing to the point of its story and like to the point of the weird pseudoscience that they're catering to.
The main thing for me is that irritates me is just that, you know, there isn't a way to intuit the right order or the correct path in this game. Mm-hmm. And so, like, it's not like I did something wrong and I'm getting punished because I picked the wrong thing or I did the wrong thing or I couldn't, you know, do this, execute this particular move or whatever. Like, it's not that kind of a game. Like, it's just, it's a gamble. And I got all the wrong ones, you know?
And
that's the frustrating thing to me is because there isn't a way to just, like, know where you're supposed to go or what you're supposed to do as you're going through it.
And like that, like, you know, like all that I can say without spoiling it is you have to do all of it before you get to the true end, because like that random jumping around when you get to a point where things become kind of intractable is exactly what they're trying to raise out of you and raise out of the main characters of this game.
Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, what I've been starting to see is that as a thing. But at the same time, it's just, one thing that Phil, since we've been talking, this is like the Phil episode, you know, Phil without Phil being on the episode, Phil, has been playing through VLR as well, and he's tolerating it a lot better than I am, but he does not like that this game forces you to choose things that you do not want to choose in order to progress. Like, he doesn't want to betray people, but you have to betray people in order to get the rest of the story. And I don't particularly mind, because I usually will go through and do like a good playthrough and a bad playthrough, so like I don't mind choosing all the options just to see what happens. But you know, like, so that particular thing is not an issue for me personally. I just don't like, you know, like the blue balling, just to shorthand it here. So like, because of that, like if I play, Zero Time Dilemma, it's going to be after a very, very long break, I would be interested in it just because of the story, but mm-hmm. I need time away from this kind of game before I even try that.
Totally understandable on like in that regard. And I would even say like take a break like before you go to Steins Gate, because I know that's what you were choosing.
I've already decided that I'm not going to take anything on anybody's damn recommendation. I am going to go play something that I have in my backlog that I picked.
Yeah. because that's
probably the best way to find something that I, that I'm not going to like get like unexpected stresses from.
So what I will say about Zero Time Dilemma is it kind of takes a little bit of that stress away from it, in that there is no direct causality between different lines. You're just mm-hmm. picking different scenes and like what order they come in. Like there's a way to look at like a broad flow chart, but it never comes together until the very end. So like in a lot of ways, maybe it could be worse, because like it just could just be this, you know, complete, you know, everything is in solution, kind of like unsatisfying mess until it ultimately crystallizes. Or like you're not actually like, you know, following and hoping that this next leap is going to be the leap home. Just kind of, you know, more being along for the ride and kind of like with the blinders on and the ability to just take each scene for what it is. Kind of like piece things together as all the characters are in very much the same boat as you, it may end up taking away that like that burden of expectation might be inadvertently bringing to it.
And I think that's really what it is that just, again, like I think the main problem with, okay, not with DMC, but like with Danganronpa and with VLR, is just that like the expectations that I have going into them set me up for like, you know, having like this discrepancy between what I'm thinking and what I'm getting. And I think that's also another reason why like it's better for me to on my next game or next few games to pick something else entirely, that I don't have any of that connection or whatever in my brain. You know, just so that way like I play something completely different.
It's gonna sound like I'm being glib, but like, you know, occasionally play in the game that you want to play as opposed to the game that somebody else has maybe like passively recommended over time might be a good strategy.
Well, and the thing is that with VLR, like it's kind of like with Danganronpa. Like I played Danganronpa until I finished it. I liked elements of the game. There are things I don't like about the game. The same thing is true with VLR. Like there's things that I like about it, and I understand like my problem with the game, my particular not taking to this constant to be continued thing that I'm coming up against, like that's particular to me. Like not everybody is having that issue. Some people are like, oh, it's like a choose your own adventure, now you have to go back and do it again and blah blah blah, and like they're having no problem with it. But like honestly, I think it's just because like I've been busy, I've been, you know, tired, it's been whatever, you know, like there's a lot of other things going on in my life that prime me for like having less patience than I normally would. And that might, you know, that's probably a good chunk of it too, which is why like I was determined that when I came on to talk about VLR tonight, I would not get ragey about it, because I already did that like twice. I don't need to do it again. You know, and really it's not that I completely hate this game, because I wouldn't still be playing it 22 fucking hours in if I didn't find something in it that I liked, you know. But it's really hard to talk about the flaws that you see in the game, or the problems that you have with the game that, you know, do not jive with you without sounding like you're just like shitting on it, you know. And
yeah,
you know, like yes, I've gotten really mad about this game, but you know, more angry about this one than I did with DMC or with Danganronpa. I've gotten irritated with this one, but at the same time, like it passed. You know, and I can still recognize there are other things about the game that I do like, that I'm, you know, and again, like as much as I don't like the mechanics, I feel that those mechanics are the best way to tell this story. So,
yeah,
you know, like
So at that point, if they're a package deal, it's a matter of determining if, you know, if you're able to look past one to get to the other, right?
Well, it's kind of like that one day that I decided to 100% her story and Cole didn't understand why I wanted to do it. Because, the whole point is, like, you know, if I find some kind of value in doing the thing, it's kind of like when I 100% her story, where I want to see the rest of these things. There's only a few more things I have to do. I'm going to keep doing it, even if I'm kind of getting bored. Because in that game, I was getting bored of the mechanic about, you know, like a third to a half through. I was getting bored of it, but I still wanted to finish seeing everything. And it's kind of like that with VLR, where I don't, like this one, you know, it just is very jarring to me, but I don't like, you know, the design at all, but I'm still playing it because there are things I want to see. So, you know,
Yeah.
But also, on an unrelated note, Puzzle Juice is a wonderful game to go to when you're very mad about VLR and you have some time to play a game on a plane. So I continue to play Puzzle Juice and have millions and millions of points and going up to like super ridiculously high levels on that game. That's the one that Dennis tried out once upon a time when I gave him the code for it. And he's like, I don't know how you do it. Because it's like Tetris, but like you have to match up. Like it's also like word search where you have to make words. And then there's like color combos and all different kinds of like levels to it. It's a good puzzle game.
Yeah, it gets pretty mind-bending pretty quickly.
That's all.
Yeah. Any questions for Jala about Puzzle Juice or VLR?
I was going to ask about her story. Is it worth 100%ing?
No, I don't think so. Really, like a lot of the stuff that I did it, but I did it, but I after having done it, I can tell you that it's not really worth 100%ing. Like there are a lot of
can you say outcome fallacy?
Well, I wouldn't know that unless I actually did it, whether or not all of it was worth it or not. Okay. And really, like it's not. Like I'd say about 75 or 80% of it was worth it, but like, you know, beating the game that's in the trash bin on the desktop of, you know, the computer that, you know, whatever, like that kind of thing, that's not necessary whatsoever. I just did it because I was just like, well, I've only got like two more achievements until I 100% this. So like, I usually don't even give a shit about achievements, but I was like, well, I can totally do this in like, you know, just a few minutes. So it's cool. But yeah, I wouldn't say that it is, Ben. Like I said, 75 or 80% of it probably, but there's a lot of like kind of useless fluff words that don't really give you much of anything. So.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. Well, it sounds like we have talked about all we have to talk about. Do you all want to button it up?
Buttons.
Let's do.
The credit. This has been level number 160. Thank you so much for listening. We are so grateful. That you make the time every week to come and join us and participate in the multiplayer and occasionally come out and see us live. Ben, Jala, I'm sure I speak for both of you, and I will let you speak when I say that getting the chance to meet folks in person and kind of just get to connect with them and hear their stories is a fantastic way to spend a weekend. Am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and also, was it you, Ben, who beat me at Connect 4?
I beat a lot of people at Connect 4.
Oh, okay, all right, okay, cool, yeah. No, it's fine. You could have just said yes and not
bragged. That's right, because,
not bragged.
Well, you see, he's he had games. To. Yeah, I was going to say, he's competitive, come on. Yeah. You knew that was coming.
if I'm remembering correctly, like you paused for like 20 seconds before like acknowledging the one move that would checkmate me. I didn't even like give you the satisfaction of getting the fourth one. I was like, yep, there's nothing I can do.
Fuck this game.
Ben, you dunked on me at Giant Connect 4. But yeah, so we've got the two big things. Check the Duck Feet update for the pin map for future kind of meetup kind of things. Kind of a subset of that one is check your calendars for the weekend around October the 20th if you're going to be in the Portland area, because that's going to be a pretty cool time. For the second one, if you want to play games with some network people and a bunch of listeners and things like that, but they're all network people too, check out duckfeed.tv/TF2. Otherwise, we super appreciate you coming back next week, telling a friend, and maybe, just maybe, leaving us a rating or review on iTunes. Yep. Is there anything that I'm missing?
No.
Huh?
All right. So I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis Furia at D Furia on Twitter.
Always Jolichan in places.
Ben Merkel at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah, and stick around for some titles. Okay, so I know that there were a handful of them, but I only got three. I want to hear other people's submissions. Jolly, go ahead.
Shit.
I had I'm a Shet.
Okay. This beard is water. Your presumption about your beard not being really a beard and et cetera.
Okay.
Thurston Fowl the Second.
Okay.
Crevasse. Are you a Dennis? Are you a Cole? And more fan equals better than.
Okay. Dennis, how about you? What you got?
I did not have any, but I like Thurston Fowl the Second.
Okay. Ben, how about you?
I just had I'm a Shit.
Okay. I had I'm a Shit. I had Make Your Day Bad on Purpose. And PWPWPVPWPWP.
Oh, that's pretty good.
So I will open the floor to people making a case for their pet ones.
I have no pets. Not okay. Not here.
You have lots of pets.
There's a certain amount of charm.
In my house.
What were you going to say, Ben?
There's a certain amount of charm to PWPWPVPWPWP.
Plus, it applies to a large portion of the episode.
Yes, it does.
I actually really like that one. Thurston Fowl the Second is a close second, but
yep,
as long as you have it actually written out, then I like that.
Yep, I do. Nice. I made sure. Yep, let's baffle some people when they download this episode.
If he seemed distracted for about 5 minutes in the middle there, it's because he was making sure he had everything. Right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, all right. Well, I'm going to break and go to bed. Thank you everybody for joining.
Yeah, good to hang out with you guys again.
I know, right? This has been a tremendously fun time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rest of the boys, cool.
All right. Cool. Well, take care, everybody.
All right.
Yeah. Good
Have
night.
A good week. Bye.
Bye.